I'm Lindsay Shooters, Biz Community Editor for IT, and this is Biz Trends 2024. There's a line in Bob Marley's Redemption song that goes, "Have no fear for atomic energy," and it speaks to a then post-World War II mistrust of science. We're kind of in that same moment right now with AI. Ghostdraft has been automating customer communications since 1984, the year that I was born. And the current CEO, Wayne Thoms, thinks that 2024 is the year that AI gets elevated above the hype cycle as an integral communications tool.
For me, it seems like an existential threat, the growth of like consumer-facing AI, the whole no-code revolution, where people can do automations on their own. So Ghostdraft is already automating customer comms. How much more does modern generative AI models add to your core offering?
Well, Lindsay, maybe I can start answering your question by telling you briefly how the customer communications field has been changing over the last few years. You know, historically, document automation was a technique that was used in financial departments or the financial industry more broadly to produce invoices and account statements and things like that, which is not that sophisticated in a way, but it's very much a labor-intensive process. So it stands to save a lot of time and increase the accuracy of what's being produced. But over the last couple of decades, and I would argue at an accelerating pace, something's happened which has changed forever how customers engage with businesses. And of course, I'm talking about the digital transformation. That little phone in your pocket is how we do everything these days, right? Including shopping, doing business, and the like. But, you know, it's one thing to buy a pizza on your phone or call an Uber. What happens when you want to buy something more complex, like, let's say, a financial product, like a funeral policy or get a home loan or something like that? And by the way, this is becoming more common. I saw a recent stat that about two-thirds of insurance customers searched online about the insurance products that they wanted to purchase. And the majority of them actually went on to conclude the transaction online. So this is becoming more and more common, these sophisticated financial transactions that I want to conclude in a digital world. And this is the need that has driven the evolution of document automation from really just producing long lists of forms into what's now called customer communication management. Or CCM. And CCM it's essentially the software that automates the production and delivery of all types of written documents, but especially these complex legal or contractual agreements. It differs from the document automation of the past in several ways, but perhaps most especially in how it can apply quite sophisticated business logic to generate documents on the fly with the appropriate clauses, words, pictures, and so on, in line with the specific customer requirements. You might say that in some ways, CCM is becoming the glue between the digital customer and the digital business for these complex financial transactions. So enter AI into that world. I would say, Lindsay, that there's a lot of confusion, maybe fear, and I would even say hyperbole when it comes to AI. So for me, it's helpful to just remind myself of what AI actually is. And at the risk of oversimplifying it, AI is essentially the use of computers to detect or recognize patterns in the data itself using mathematical algorithms. Right? Once it's detected or recognized those patterns, it uses that to generate predictions, which typically require human intelligence and give the impression that human intelligence has been deployed to solve the problem. And early AI, or for many years, AI really was used to identify patterns in quantitative data. And having done so, it would use that data to predict all those patterns to predict future events like the weather or, for that matter, what movies you're going to watch on Netflix next or that are best suited to you. Now, generative AI is different. Over the last year, since ChatGPT has become, the word of the year, as according to economists, everything has changed and there's been this increased focus. Generative AI can generate new content or data that's similar to but not identical to the data that it was trained on. And ChatGPT is a great example. It can generate its own sentences and paragraphs in response to an input question, right? Mm. And it does this by understanding how similar questions were answered in its training examples. And this then is where this opportunity arises for customer communications. Mm. By recognizing patterns in customer behavior, needs, interactions, AI can personalize not just the product offering, mm. but the whole interaction between the business and the customer. So what does that mean specifically for AI in modern customer communications? Well, let's start with chatbots. I think we're all familiar with chatbots. AI-powered chatbots can simulate a conversation with a customer. It can give the appearance of understanding simple sentences and providing relevant responses. But beyond that, AI can also simplify complex decision-making processes by analyzing the factors that best drive business value, both for the customer and for the business itself. For example, insurance policy underwriting. I need to decide whether Lindsay is worth insuring based on his risk and what the premiums should be related to that. Or home loan screening. And then having done this, it can route the data through a formal workflow and make sure that the process is that much more accessible and efficient. An example here is insurance claims processing. So you may have used an app on your phone to photograph your car, the dent in your car, and AI is then deployed to analyze those photographs and make sure that these are indeed legitimate photographs. This is your car, this is a dent, and this is a legitimate claim.
Yeah.
We also know that generative AI is useful in writing documents, perhaps summarizing or paraphrasing them to make them easier to understand. And that's a very useful feature for many businesses who need to draw bespoke contracts with customers, right? To make sure that they protect the business's rights and, by the way, the consumer's rights, while at the same time making them very accessible from a readability point of view and protect consumers' rights from that point of view. So these are a number of different areas where we're seeing AI start to be really deployed in customer communications right now. And if we get this right, you know, the customer stands to benefit quite enormously, you know, perhaps most significantly, the swift, accurate responses that you will get from use of systems like this will enhance the overall customer experience. But more than that, by better understanding what customers are actually looking for and what their specific requirements are, AI can provide more relevant recommendations to customers, ensuring that they receive products and services that are tailored to their needs. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, if AI can play a role in delivering cost efficiencies to businesses, those can translate into potential savings for customers themselves, making products more accessible and affordable to customers themselves.
Okay, but there's a lot in that, especially that last bit. And a lot of it is human capital that does not exist in the equation anymore. But a lot of it is also, like, in the role that automation plays in enhancing the customer relationship. But are there maybe not potential challenges of losing that, like, human-to-human kind of connection? Because people are remarkably perceptive to the fact that they're not actually speaking to a human. So where are the challenges, where are the opportunities, and where are the enhancements? And what's happening to the people in the contact centers? And, like, where are we putting people in this equation?
Are you referring specifically to this from an AI point of view or more broadly from a customer communications point of view?
From an AI perspective, like how AI fits
in. Yeah, I mean, you
replace a lot of jobs because those cost savings are humans that they don't have to pay anymore.
Yeah. It's a very good question. I got to say, if we start saying, you know, what are customers' views about AI? I think people are split. Many people are prepared to and in fact eager to work with some kind of AI-enabled layer, and many of them are hesitant to do so. And job losses and this apprehension about job displacement because of the increased automation is indeed one of the potential threats that people perceive. But actually, Lindsay, I'd say there's a number of others that are important as well. I mean, off the bat, many customers just feel that AI does a bad job of understanding what their specific requirements are and of interacting with them. In fact, there's this term, AI hallucinations, has been coined, where the AI tool, with all its fancy algorithms, identifies patterns in the data which simply don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
They're non-existent or even nonsensical. And there was an example of ChatGPT not so long ago where it stated quite categorically that James Joyce, the author,
Yeah.
and Vladimir Lenin had met in, I think it was Zurich in 1916, and never happened. But that's what it said. So if
Dude,
this is
ChatGPT has told me straight up that I am the editor of Tech Central, and I mean, I have no issue with Duncan.
right, but unfortunately, ChatGPT is wrong. And of course, take this a step forward. I'm sure you've heard of cases where this kind of hallucination has led to prejudice, where AI has been making discriminatory recommendations. And there was an example of, I think it was Amazon who had a recruitment algorithm to help in its selection of staff, and they trained that algorithm in 10 years of employment history data. And because that history was predominantly male dominated, the algorithm learned to be biased against applications from women and even CVs that referred a lot to women. And this is something which, whenever it's being caught, is highly publicized, and the algorithm developers and practitioners are working very quickly to try and root that out. But this is a complex journey they're on. I think we're all, add to that, we're all worried about the potential misuse of private data, whether it's a risk of that data being leaked, or alternatively, that data is used in some inappropriate way, whether it's to train algorithms, maybe a little bit of what I was just speaking about a moment ago, but using it to approve a loan, whatever it may be. I would, and then of course there's a more philosophical concern that people have with AI more generally, is that it's potentially undermining what we may perceive to be the truth. And we've all heard the rise of deep fakes, which are indistinguishable from the truth. And more broadly, and we read a lot of this, there's this fear of the unknown and potentially a loss of control. People don't understand AI. Many people don't understand AI, including many practitioners. And so we're afraid of the more extreme predictions that, AI may go rogue. It may develop capabilities that may outperform humans. I have to say, in my perception, that many of these predictions are vague, and experts actually disagree on exactly what the risk is associated with all of this. But having said all of that, what does that mean for us as businesses who communicate to customers? What can our responses be, and what are the general measures that can be taken to grow customers' trust in AI? I think the first, of course, is regulation to control or constrain how and where AI algorithms are used, and provide transparency to customers regarding the use of AI. This is very topical. In fact, you're probably aware that as we speak, EU lawmakers are in the midst of marathon negotiations to put in place a regulatory framework for AI in the EU. And that framework, early indications are that it may contain a list of all the AI models which are deemed to pose what they call a systemic risk. And providers of general purpose AI will be required to publish summaries of their algorithms and the training content, the content that was used to train those models.
I'm sorry for laughing, but that's a near impossible task at this
Yeah,
point.
that sounds like a typical EU regulation.
Yeah, the genie is already out of the bottle, man.
But I have to say that the EU seems to be leading the global regulatory response to AI. We know that the US will follow, and so the EU is going to, who knows, it could become the framework or the blueprint that gets used more broadly as a departure point for how other governments are going to think of it. But Lindsay, beyond the regulatory response, there's an ethical angle to this as well, right? And in fact, the whole idea of AI ethics has received a lot of attention. And some businesses are looking to communicate clearly to their customers how AI is being used in their interaction, and maybe even explain at a very high non-technical level what the AI is actually doing. A good example is Google, which has had an ethical framework for for many years, despite the occasional evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
back in the days of Google, before it became Alphabet, their motto was "Don't be evil," right? And you know that's now been changed to "Do the right thing." And so there's an attempt to say, how can I deploy AI in a way that we can stay true to our guiding principle as well? And practically, what this may mean, an option that would appeal to many customers, I would argue, is to expand customer control of the use of AI in their interactions. So that could, for example, say to customers, you can decide what data of yours gets submitted to an AI model and decide whether an AI interaction is used in this particular interaction with you, allowing users to easily opt in or opt out of AI-driven features. But I have to say, and this is my personal opinion, I think a key element which we also need to address going forward is to educate AI practitioners. This isn't just about working with customers. This is about working with the people who develop the AI algorithms in the first place, so that they design algorithms which improve collaboration between humans and AI, emphasizing the complementarity of their roles rather than the fact that they are alternatives for each other, but not replacing or abdicating responsibility to the computer. And I think, by the way, for us as people, we're generally very comfortable with that idea. As we see the evolution of search engines like Bing and Google and the extent to which they're increasingly deploying AI, users are completely happy to have an AI algorithm do the initial research and present those results to them. And then the user figures out what they're really interested in. So it's a great combination of the strengths that both can provide together. You know, AI doesn't understand context or nuance the way we do as humans. They don't understand hopes and fears the way we do. And I would say if we allow AI to have unfettered and uncontrolled, unregulated access to run business activities, it's going to miss things, like I spoke about earlier. And that's where customer trust will be damaged. I read recently the words of Kevin Scott, the CTO of Microsoft. Of course, you'll be aware that Microsoft has been deploying AI into its Office products through its Copilot tools.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, they do relatively mundane tasks really well.
Yes.
They're a long way from replacing humans, from doing what humans do. But it was interesting to hear what Scott says on this. He says that is by design, not by accident. He says he expects AI to continue to seep steadily into our lives, but only as fast as humans are able to absorb how this technology ought to be used. And I think that's a good framework for how we might navigate this AI future in a way that's very much beneficial to businesses and to customers. So what does that mean in some of the examples that I've spoken about earlier? Practically for customer communications. Well, if we think about chatbots, maybe we can restrict the chatbot scope to simpler questions and route the more complex questions to an agent. We already know that AI is able to score the degree of certainty it has with an answer. So it does have a way for us to determine where it may get things wrong. Similarly, for complex decision-making algorithms, like some of those customer screening or underwriting examples that I spoke about, referring complex decisions to humans for review. And then when it comes to the AI developers, the AI practitioners, what might be useful there is when they build and train these models in the first place, is to do selective audits and selective recordings of AI recommendations and to figure out how good of a job it actually is doing and use that to refine the models going forward.
Yeah, but this all sounds like you're kind of on the back foot, because you've obviously found a niche that is now being, because like if you look at just the Microsoft example, they have licensed a big part of the ChatGPT engine and are building it into their service offerings, plus they run all the compute that it does. So is a company like Ghostdraft investing in your product without all those kinds of advantages, technology advantages that Microsoft has? Or do you then buy off the shelf and try and integrate it into what you offer?
Yeah, good question. Well, at Ghostdraft, what our company does is to help companies to automate their customer communication for these complex online transactions. And we've got an industrial strength CCM platform, which we use predominantly in the insurance and financial service industries in North America, where we have about 80 medium and large customers. And we're increasingly seeing an appetite in South Africa for solutions like that. And when we've been looking at AI for the last year, and our stance has been very much, as I talked about earlier, to regard AI as a potential adjunct to the human responsibilities. You know, if our customers are using AI or CCM or generally our product in order to construct and generate complex financial documents, let's say a commercial insurance policy for a housing estate and all the assets within the housing estate, those can be thick documents. You need to make sure absolutely everything is done right there. The idea that a computer is going to generate all of that from scratch, notwithstanding the fact that it has been fed a huge amount of data, that's not something that's imminent at any stage in the future. So the way we've been viewing AI is very much as this adjunct to the human intelligence. And the first thing we started with was using a ChatGPT-based engine to analyze samples of existing policy documents for our customers in the insurance industry to learn what the structure, the format, the text, and the data elements in those documents was, and therefore how it could build a new policy document from scratch.
Yeah.
And then having learned that, we can codify this so that future policies can be generated automatically on the fly. But having done that, what we're now looking at is how we can use AI to produce templates for brand new contracts or for new lines of insurance business. And AI can help by identifying what types of information, what type of clauses need to be included. For example, if you want to insure a new warehouse, do you need a lead exclusion policy? Do you need a policy related to environmental management and the likes? And AI can help in identifying, in doing complex semantic searches of similar policies to help lift out from your business archive the types of clauses and paragraphs and sections that need to be included. And in fact, it can do that in the public domain. So imagine if you're busy offering a new type of insurance and you say, well, I've never insured this in the past, but I happen to know my competitors have insured this and I can see their policies. I have insured similar products in the past. What is the legal and compliance framework that I need to be able to put around this policy? By doing these kinds of clever semantic searches involving AI, I'm able to put the bones of that, to draft a version of that very quickly. And then further, take it a step further, and AI can help suggest appropriate wording for these clauses, which meet the compliance requirements, but at the same time make the documents understandable for normal customers. And then humans can get involved in this process, review the work that's been done, and actually develop it into the kind of policy that can be reviewed by actual humans. And during that process, AI can provide useful input. It can suggest alternatives or fixes in real time as I work on these things. And you know, Lindsay, such tools in an industry like financial services have a significant impact in helping to bring business to light much more quickly. And faster to market means faster to revenue, right? And that's what it's all about. So that's how we see our particular mission in terms of AI for the time being.
Yeah, no, that still sounds to me like the big corporates can just get the same custom GPT that you guys have built and then get someone who's smart enough to figure out the prompts and build out their competing thing. But then as a broader discussion, you being a software as a service vendor, do you see a future shrinking of your ecosystem, of the number of SaaS companies that we are seeing now because of this like automation and innovation that can be done in-house?
I don't, and I'll tell you why. I would say this idea of being able to build certain things in-house, and particularly with the growth of low code development environments, these kinds of tools and these approaches have indeed been an enabler to build new solutions faster. I will acknowledge that, but many of the more complex functions which companies need to be able to offer their products in the digital world are dependent on quite sophisticated algorithms, as we've been speaking about, which need to be designed and built by experts. So it's not easy to do those kinds of things in-house, and low code is not necessarily going to lift that burden. For example, I mentioned earlier about support for underwriting and insurance. If an insurance company needs to do an underwriting analysis engine to determine whether it should insure a new customer, what the premiums should be, such an engine can't easily be developed even with low code. And that's because the real meat in that lies in the algorithms behind the scenes. And these algorithms are developed by specialist tech providers and in fact, experts in those industries. And so what I've seen is over the last few years an emergence of a new model of corporate IT architecture, what I would call a transition from a monolithic architecture to what one might call an ecosystem-based architecture. And the ecosystem deconstructs those large enterprise applications into separate constituent components which talk to each other very well. And then this model has an easy integration layer, allowing functionality to be extended through the inclusion of specialist applications, which will provide those more sophisticated functional needs. And these specialist applications often take the form of SaaS services, cloud services, instead of software that gets compiled into the enterprise application itself. And they're usually integrated through API or something like that. And in fact, what I've even seen happen is as this model grows, it even stretches into the idea of a marketplace model where you have multiple vendors offering pre-integrated applications that can be very easily integrated. And this has become the dominant model also for CCM functionality, this customer communications functionality as well, because it can provide you quick access to this quite sophisticated functionality. And particularly our customer base being in insurance and financial services, we've seen many of the world's top policy and claims administration systems, the core enterprise systems that they use, have now chosen to integrate this additional functionality into systems like Ghostdraft, whether it's customer communications or clever engines for analysis and underwriting. These systems are generally available as SaaS solutions rather than develop and maintain their own solutions. And of course, get this right, you're able to get access to the sophisticated functionality quite quickly, minimal management overhead, and these businesses can crack on with the core business of selling and servicing insurance policies. In I think it was October, I was at the biggest insurtech conference in the world in Las Vegas, where there's 10,000 people participating, and there's a good 700 vendors of products like this. Some of them represent the core enterprise applications, but many of them represent these specialist applications that are designed to work in tandem with the core applications. So I think that's a model that's going to persist for a while.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I've had a couple of conversations in your industry where you're getting larger companies trying to like recruit or incubate, they call it, smaller kind of startups in the insurtech kind of space. There's like massive funds. You obviously know of these funds that have been launched to take that. And I always see them as like being quite predatory in the way that they acquire like that kind of IP. And I always have conversations with founders and be like, do you really want to sell out like this quickly, or do you want to like build it out into something bigger without the restrictions that these funds can have? So it's interesting that you're so optimistic about the expansion of the SaaS industry.
Yeah, this being as much as that does happen, this acquisition and internalization of this functionality, it's such a dynamic and changing and evolving field and market that new stuff is constantly coming out. And it's great because as much as this stands to benefit customer benefit businesses in terms of how they run their business operations and the shrewdness with which they're able to make business decisions, undoubtedly this does stand to benefit customers enormously. And if it gets that right, and if providers of these solutions, including the AI solutions, if they do this in the right way, I really see far more benefit than risk ahead of us.
Yeah, no, that's great. Just in closing, what do you have kids?
No.
Okay. But for young people, like what are you, 'cause we went through this phase where we were everyone needs to learn how to code. And AI is just like generative AI is just kind of moved past that. So now you have like a whole bunch of kids who know how to code, but the AI can do it for you. So what is the advice that you would have for like young people who are like starting to choose what career they want to go into, what path they want to follow? Like what tools must you have in your arsenal to be successful in like the new software economy?
Lindsay, don't get me going on this. I think for me, one of the most valuable things that kids can do at school is do some form of computer programming, some form of coding. And that is as important in this country as it is any other country. And it's what is at the core of our economy going forward and our global economy going forward. And if we get this right, we can do many great things. I would argue that for us to deploy AI intelligently, for us to master it, for us to be in charge of AI rather than AI being in charge of us, we need to get to grips with basically how it works. And I'm not saying we need to do a master's degree in AI, but if you don't understand the basics of what a computer program consists of and how to code, you will not be able to deploy these tools effectively. Conversely, if I do have that basic understanding, I can make good decisions as to where to deploy AI and for what, and as you say, what prompts to feed it and the likes. Apart from anything else, coding isn't just about knowing the syntax of a specific computer language, knowing how to write Python commands. It's understanding how a computer thinks. And once I've got that clear in my head, I can design products that are effective for the future.